Hi there, listeners. It's Farnoosh, and I just want to say I'm really honored that you've chosen to subscribe to So Money. I know there are a lot of podcasts out there. The fact that you're here is not lost on me. Now, if you're enjoying these episodes and you're benefiting from the advice and you want more, I've actually created something really special for us. It's called the So Money Members Club. It's an online platform where you can connect more closely with me and engage with fellow So Money fans who want to become more empowered in their financial lives. The website is SoMoneyMembers.com. And when you go there, you'll learn all the benefits, including exclusive monthly finance workshops, private group calls with me. You get your questions answered in our member community. I'm often in there weighing in, and you get instant access to all of our workshop recordings. We have a robust library that's growing. So far, we've had workshops on investing in real estate, kids and money, and how to earn more in 2024. And most of all, it's fun, positive, encouraging, all the things personal finance should be. Go to SoMoneyMembers.com, and I hope you'll join us. I'm limiting enrollment, and doors will close soon. Check out SoMoneyMembers.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hosting the So Money podcast for almost 10 years, I've been learning a lot about how to best serve you outside the show. I've begun to offer pop-up workshops and a So Money members club. And with each new line of business, a lot goes on behind every transaction. Stripe helps simplify and ease payments with Tap to Pay on iPhone, which helps me grow revenue and reach through accepting more in-person contactless payments when I'm out in real life promoting my programs. Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe give me the ability to scale quickly and stay flexible with quick setup and no additional hardware required. And it's not just ideal for me. From local pop-ups to global retailers, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe help businesses of all sizes accept contactless payments right from an iPhone. Whether your customers want to use their card, Apple Pay, or other digital wallet, now you can accept contactless payments right from an iPhone. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone. So Money episode 1581, Ask Farnoosh.
You're listening to So Money with award-winning money guru Farnoosh Torabi. Each day, get a 30-minute dose of financial inspiration from the world's top business minds, authors, influencers, and from Farnoosh herself. Looking for ways to save on gas or double your double coupons? Sorry, you're in the wrong place. Seeking profound ways to live a richer, happier life? Welcome to So Money.
Welcome to So Money, everybody. Friday, October 20th. I'm Farnoosh Torabi. You are listening to our Ask Farnoosh Friday episodes. Today, we have questions about whether to cash out some underperforming stocks. Someone in the audience is weighing two different job offers and wants to know which one to take. I'm also going to share a question that's been popping up on my book tour, which is, Farnoosh, what are the fears you want your kids to have? And I have some thoughts. First, though, I want to start out by clarifying something about the book. It's come up a couple of times over the last couple of weeks since the book has debuted. And I just want to let everybody know, I think we all know this, but it's getting a little bit lost in translation. A healthy state of panic is not about how to be fearless. No, it's all the opposite. It's to the contrary. It's about how to embrace fear. You know this, right? Some are still quick to think that what I'm talking about is just the same thing everyone else is telling us, which is that you got to be fearless all the time. Ignore your fears, fight your fears. Well, as someone who's never quite been able to master that, I wanted to write a more honest take on how to work with fear, because I think we all know that when we have these emotions that, yeah, maybe they're a little uncomfortable, if we try to just fight them or ignore them, they just tend to compound. They don't go away. That's not how fear works. The world's a scary place. And so what if we learn how to have a healthier relationship with fear? That's what a healthy state of panic is all about. And again, I've never been able to be quite fearless. I think I present as fearless I have a podcast. I'm talking to you. This isn't a small thing. This isn't an easy thing to do. This isn't something that comes naturally or is not without fear. I go on stages and I talk to hundreds, thousands of people. I go on television live. These things are not easy peasy, and they do require a level of addressing fear. There's always a rumble of fear whenever I go up and give a talk or whatever, but I've learned how to work with it. I've learned to listen to my fears, to figure out what they want me to protect. If I'm about to go on stage and I'm scared, why is that? Is it because I'm not prepared? Is it because I haven't surveyed the audience? Is it because my PowerPoint presentation is glitchy? Well, I better check on those things, right? So that I can get up on stage and still do this thing that seems terrifying, but with more confidence and knowing that I have done everything I can to make sure that it is successful. And that's what we want at the end of the day, right? It's not that I'm trying to make this, you know, again, this talk on stage perfect, no such thing. It's more that when I get up there, I will feel like I have a handle on things. And even if things don't go my way, I will know how to navigate because I have understood what my fears are and I've made a plan to work around them. So a healthy state of panic, not about how to fight your fears or how to be fearless. This has come up a little bit on the tour. I was on a panel at Montclair State University earlier this week, and the panel was about how to work with your fears. And the number of times people on the panel would say things like, I'm fearless. I love that about me. And I'm like, maybe it's not that you're totally fearless, but that you have learned how to have a healthy relationship with fear. We don't give ourselves enough credit when it comes to how we actually face and interact with fear. It's much cooler maybe to say that you're completely fearless, but I've never been that person, right, who can just not calculate for risk. Who can do that? I think it's a privileged few, and you know who I'm talking about. In my newsletter yesterday, I actually explored the fear of financial uncertainty. If you're not subscribed to my newsletter, you can do so easily at farnoosh.tv/newsletter. I've reserved a special gift for you there. Link in the show notes. In the newsletter, I talk about how we all have this fear of financial uncertainty, especially right now. And broadly speaking, things haven't always gone to plan in my life. Starting with the day I was born. My parents intended to return to Iran in 1980, the year I was born, but the revolution disrupted things and we've been here ever since. I thought I was going to get into the college of my dreams. Instead, I got rejected from most of the schools I applied to, 80% of them, in fact. I was a political science major my freshman year in college. Thought I was going to go to law school. That didn't happen. Who knew I'd become a financial writer? In my 20s, I wasn't sure that I wanted to become a mom. Now I have two kids. For years, I wanted to pursue a full-time career in television, which proved me wrong. I thought I was raising my family in Brooklyn forever, but now I'm podcasting from my house in New Jersey. And so I write about this in A Healthy State of Panic, how I've experienced breakups, miscarriage, job losses, and many other unexpected things, hardships that prove uncertainty is just kind of the only certainty in life. And we see this globally. We see this right now, with all this political unrest, there's a lot of medical and health uncertainty in the world. There's an ever-widening wealth gap. And as technology evolves, we're right now terrified of what that's going to mean for our future, right? What is the rise of robots, artificial intelligence, crypto going to mean for civilization? But the fear of uncertainty, let's sit with it for a minute. What does it want us to protect? It wants us to protect our sense of control. And for me, when I look at the fear in this way, it has offered me surprising upsides. This fear wants us to pause. It wants us to reflect, gather information, and work through the fog. It doesn't want us to stay stuck. It doesn't want us to catastrophize like we tend to impulsively do when this fear shows up. But take it from me, use this fear as a sign that maybe you need to do something different, bigger. Maybe you have to make a serious decision. Maybe you have to make a change, all so that you can alleviate some of the risks and eliminate some of this uncertainty. When I got laid off in 2009 from thestreet.com during the recession, the height of the recession, I panicked, of course. And I wanted to regain the certainty of my paycheck, my title, which I had negotiated this senior correspondent title only 6 months before that. I was actually told the week before I got laid off that I was one of the best people on the team by my boss. So talk about not expecting a pink slip. And I was terrified, but my fear of uncertainty wanted me to answer this question. What can you do to regain your sense of control and confidence? There are things that I couldn't do that I really wanted to. Like, I couldn't go back and ask for my job. I couldn't recreate my salary and my title. I certainly couldn't reverse the subprime mortgage debacle, the housing crash, the financial crash, any of it. That was all out of my control. But what can I control? That is what the fear of uncertainty wants you to identify, especially in our financial lives. And what I did was I took inventory of unshakable, unwavering certainties in my life. I call these my priceless assets. It's all that stuff that if you hit rock bottom, this is what remains no matter what. And it's good. For me in 2009, my priceless assets look like my body of work, my platform as a journalist, as an author. I had fortunately published my first book a year prior to the layoff, my education, my professional network. Also, not for nothing, I could stay up all night and work on projects, which isn't true anymore, but back then it was. And this exercise of seeing and remembering my priceless assets proved to me that you can lay a woman off from her job, but you cannot lay her off from her ambitions. And so right away, I started to freelance much faster than trying to regain a full-time job in the recession because there weren't any, frankly. I began contacting various organizations. I pitched myself as a contributor, a consultant, or a speaker. They weren't all home runs, but enough of them were. And later that same year, I combined my income streams into a business, which was actually quite frightening to me prior to getting laid off. I thought I could never start a business, but uncertainty taught me otherwise. And I began building my platform. I went from writing to hosting television, running workshops, doing this podcast. The fear of uncertainty has led me to you. So let this be your work. Whenever you fear financial uncertainty and you want to make friends with the fear, my advice, remember who you are. Remember what you're capable of. What can't be taken from you. Use this to make your next best move. Again, that was all taken from my newsletter this week, which I love writing once a week. It's not an overwhelming email. Don't worry. You're not going to get an email every day selling you stuff. It's just my money musings and lately my fear musings. Switching gears to our podcast episodes this week, in case you missed any, here's a recap. Earlier this week, we met with Anisha Ramakrishna, who is the star of the Bravo show Family Karma, and she also hosts a podcast called Currently Cringing. We talked about playing financial catch-up in your late 30s. Anisha is 39, newly married, and also new to really getting a handle on her finances. She talks about how she pivoted from a really stable, good, solid career in fashion to entertainment, where now she's pursuing comedy and reality TV. It's a whole other world, and talk about financial uncertainty. But there are many lessons she's learned along the way. She finally feels like she's come into enough money where she can actually do things with it other than just get by. A rich conversation with Anisha. She also talked about her lessons learned as an immigrant. She moved to the US from India when she was just 10 years old. Then on Wednesday, we spoke with Karen Brzezanski, who's a transformational money mindset expert. And we talked about the struggle with wanting more, wanting to be rich, declaring that. We can all agree that every person has the right to be rich and to claim wealth. But when it comes to our own ability to do that and our own wanting for that, we struggle sometimes. Are we worth it? Is it right? Is it right for me? What does that say about me that I want money, that I like money? Karen unpacks all this for us. Karen's also the founder of theluckysoul.com. So check out that if you're interested in your own journey towards claiming wealth. She's helped hundreds of women make more money and eliminate financial stress. P.S. I mentioned this last week. I'll mention it again. It's worth repeating. If you are liking this show, please subscribe. I don't often ask you to subscribe because I assume you already are, but there was a glitch in Apple Podcasts earlier this summer that I've just learned about, which makes a lot of sense now because I'm realizing that not everybody is subscribed as they were, basically bumped a lot of shows out of your feed. And so if you've been missing some shows, that's probably why. That is to assume you're on the Apple Podcasts player. This wasn't the case with Spotify or some of the other podcast players. So not to promote Apple Podcasts exclusively, but if that is your preferred podcast player, just make sure that this show is in your subscribe folder. That way you never miss an episode and you always get them as soon as they publish. Sticking with Apple Podcasts though, let's go find our reviewer of the week who's going to get a free 15-minute money session with me. This time we're going to say thank you to Addis from Orlando, who says the show is a must for all. This show has given me the strength to ask for what I want, says Addis, without feeling guilt or shame. I've consulted Farnoosh on Instagram at several times, and she has given me advice as if we were old friends. I recommend this show to everyone. Addis, thank you so much. And by the way, that's true. You can often catch me in the DMs on Instagram. You can slide into my DMs and we'll have a conversation. But Addis, I'd love to move our relationship from Instagram to the phone. Call me. But first, I'm going to send you a link to where you can pick a time for us to connect. For that, you'll have to email me though at farnoosh@somoneypodcast.com. So email me farnoosh@somoneypodcast.com. I'll send you a link to where you can schedule a time for us to chat.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
For the longest time, I dreaded buying bras. It was like shopping for jeans. Impossible. You want a bra that's sexy? You want a bra that's comfortable? You can't have both. Well, now you can, thanks to Third Love. Third Love was started to take all the frustration, the ick, the ugh, out of bra shopping. That's why they make solutions for every bra problem or brablem. Their bras make it easy to bring back perkiness you haven't seen since high school. Get smoothing, you know where, and have straps that actually stay put. Designed at their headquarters in San Francisco and made with premium materials, they put every style through hours of wear testing on real women, including themselves, before it's given the stamp of boob approval. Comfort and support are guaranteed. Plus, whether you're a AA cup or an H cup, their virtual fitting room will help you find your perfect fit fast. They even invented half cups. No more feeling stuck between two cup sizes that don't fit. It's time to get your problems solved. Visit thirdlove.com and get $15 off your order with the code PODCAST15. The weather's getting warmer as I record. It's a nice 73 degrees on the East Coast. So finally, time to say goodbye to jackets and sweaters and, fingers crossed, hello to shorts and tees. And I need to update my wardrobe for the long haul. And, you know, I don't want to spend a fortune. So luckily, I found Quince. I'm honest. I've got a lineup of timeless pieces from Quince that keep me looking effortlessly chic year after year. I'm talking premium European linen dresses, blouses and shorts from $30, washable silk tops, timeless 14-karat gold jewelry, and tons more. Best part, all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. I have t-shirts from Quince, pajamas from Quince. My very chic and fashionable sister-in-law, Hannah, her whole closet is Quince. And people often stop us and ask, where did you get this? Don't tell me the price. And then when I do, they're shopping on quince.com. Get warm weather ready with Quince. Go to quince.com/somoney for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/somoney to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/somoney. Now let's answer your money questions. Starting with the question that I've been getting a little bit on this book tour, which is, Farnoosh, what beers do you want your children to have? My kids are 6 and 9. And my parents raised me with, I think, An abundance of fear. I'm not sure I want to repeat that. I can appreciate some of it, but I'm not sure I want to terrify my kids about all the things that really don't, like, we know, like, you can probably share some cookies with your friends in school if you're in kindergarten, as long as you're not allergic to anything and all will be fine. Or, you know, you can go to a friend's house for a play date, and as long as there are adults there and you've met the parents at least once, like, you know, go for it. Go for it. I think my parents were very cautious about me being in the company and presence and responsibility of other people. They were worried about me eating things that they hadn't prepared for me. I don't know. Was it like the 5 o'clock news in the '80s at that time? All the kids on the backs of milk cartons? Probably, but you live, you learn. And I've lived and learned. And while I allow my kids, I think, a lot more space and runway to be free and interact with the world, there are things that I think are worthy of their extra care and attention. And when I say that I want my kids to be afraid of these things, it's really so that they give it a minute and stop and think more critically before they're about to do something as regular as like riding their bikes in the street. You know, I always tell them that they can be really cautious, but other people may not be cautious. So you have to be hyper vigilant when you're riding your bike or running across the street. That I've also learned kids up until the age of 10, this actually came up on the tour, don't have an accurate sense of speed and proximity when cars are approaching them. They think they're further than they are. So for all these reasons, I think I'm going to keep telling my kids to look both ways several times before they cross the street, before they ride their bikes across the street. They of course have to wear their helmets. They of course usually have to be with an adult still when they're doing these sorts of things. But never hurts to tell them and know that this is something that they should be afraid of. And of course, you know, strangers, I actually talked to my son the other day about we having a secret password. If somebody ever comes to the schoolyard and says, hey, your mom called me and said, I need to come pick you up. You got to ask this person, what's the secret password? And then he'll know that this person and I have had a conversation and that I have approved this pickup. The school's really good about also making sure that these sorts of things don't happen. But I don't think that's a bad thing for kids to know that they shouldn't trust strangers that just come up to them and want them to get in their cars. And, you know, this was definitely a fear that my parents instilled in me. I have friends who were like, I was never afraid of strangers. And I was like, well, I'm so glad it worked out for you. But in the meantime, I'm going to continue this fear for myself and for my kids. And then financially speaking, I think I want my kids to be afraid of knowing that mom and dad are not going to be here for all the bailouts. My parents were very generous, I thought, in this department, where my dad did bail me out at one point with some credit card debt early on. But then I got back into credit card debt, so I didn't learn my lesson. And I got out of that second and third time of credit card debt myself. I think it's healthy for everybody to have a little bit of financial fear that they're not going to take risks with spending. They're going to be thoughtful about how they budget, spending within your means. I think that if you are afraid because you know you're somebody that has a tendency to be impulsive with your spending, listen to that fear, get some help. When people write in and they say, we're thinking about paying for some of our children's college education, but not all of it, because we want them to have some skin in the game. Maybe that means they come out of college with a little bit of debt, but could that be helpful in some ways? One, they're more financially invested in their success at school. They're not likely to quit or drop out because then they know that they're going to have this money to pay back at some point. And if they don't have a degree, that's going to feel pretty lousy. And then when they graduate and they have this debt that is theirs, it might encourage them to go out there and make money faster than they would. And this isn't about saddling your kid with $70,000, $80,000, $100,000 worth of debt, but $15,000, $20,000. I had about $20,000, $30,000 worth of graduate student loan debt that I carried for many years, but it encouraged me to go out there and get several revenue streams. Once I got my book deal, I paid off the balance immediately. That felt amazing. And my father was insistent on that. He was like, I'm not paying for a graduate school entirely. You're going to have to take out most of the loans. And if you really want to do this, you need to be committed. And he probably had the resources, but he wanted me to be more critical about the decisions I was making, realizing I'm the adult now, and if I'm going to do this, I need to afford the consequences. So those are just a few healthy fears that I'll probably be passing on to my kids. I probably already am. What about you? What are some fears that you are going to pass on to your kids or are passing on to your kids that's coming from a good place? Let me know, because I'm thinking that maybe the next leg of this book, the next iteration, could be something for families, for kids, for parents. We'll see. All right, to the mailbag. First question is from our friend in the audience who is in the midst of accepting one of two jobs. It's a nice problem, I guess. Nat writes in and says, firstly, congratulations on the book, Farnoosh. My copy's on its way and I can't wait to dive in. Well, when you get the book, fast forward maybe to the chapter on the fear of uncertainty, because it sounds like you're kind of at this crossroads and working through the uncertainty, the fear could be really, really helpful. Here's Nat's question, everybody. Nat is deciding between two job offers. Nat says, I haven't worked in about a year due to a big burnout that saw me on sick leave for 7 months, at which point I decided to quit entirely because coworkers informed me that the work environment had become even worse. I simply wasn't willing to put myself back into a situation that had been so detrimental, especially when I'd come so far in resting and healing. After several months of applications, I'm now in the early stages of interviewing for two positions that differ in several ways. Neither pay what I was making, but I am ready for some structure and income and would continue my job hunt for something higher paying. The first job is full-time and high volume with an expected promotion within 18 months. Job two would be 30 hours a week. It pays less, but has a lot of flexibility in when I log those hours. It also has a stronger title, which I'm thinking will be beneficial in future job searches as it will enhance my resume. I don't think I can leverage the jobs against each other in negotiations because they're not very similar, so the businesses are not competitors. In terms of my financial situation, I've almost depleted my emergency fund, but my partner has a good salary and can float us while I continue to search for the right fit professionally. Our only debt is a mortgage. It's very manageable. We only have 3 years left, and the interest rate is 2.29%. I'm leaning towards the lesser paying part-time job because I think the flexibility would be really helpful as I ease back into working. Plus, the title will strengthen my resume going forward. I worry though about leaning away from more money. It feels like I'm pushing my own financial goals further away. Are there any angles I'm failing to consider here? Any prompts are welcome. Well, Nat or Natalie, I'm finally seeing your full name here. Natalie, thank you so much for this question. First, I'm really happy you took time off. That was time well spent. Good for you. Anyone listening who's burnt out, it's not easy to quit your job. That's a really hard choice. Do I stay in the job that's making me miserable, but it's paying my bills? Or do I leave, get the time off that I need, and deal with potential financial consequences with not working? I'm glad, Natalie, that you were able to get the care, and it sounds like you were able to support yourself financially. And now you want to get back at it. I'm with you. I think job number two, even though it's a lesser paying job, is far better than job number one. Far better. Of course, no one likes to leave money on the table, but that money is going to come at a price. Job number one is high volume, you said. And that doesn't sound like what you're looking for right now. You are in a different place in your life. And you asked me, what is something that I'm failing to consider here? So I want to use your words, right? You said, I worry about leaning away from more money because it feels like I'm pushing myself away from my financial goals. Did you ever consider that in order to achieve financial goals, you need to also have time, flexibility, and your health? Your financial goals don't just happen because you have the money. You also need to have the space and the mental health. And so you might make more money in job number one, but it's going to come to you at too tall a cost. And your financial goals, I understand, are to increase your emergency fund. Making a little bit less money is not as ideal as making more money to enhance the emergency fund, but you're going to have an extra at least 10 hours a week to do whatever you want. Could you do something on the side to focus on rebuilding that emergency fund? Your mortgage at 2.29%, if that's your only debt, God bless you. I think that's so great. Your emergency fund will get replenished. Commit to spending less, maybe working an extra 5, 7, 10 hours a week, something that you choose. You can do exclusively online on your own time and compartmentalize that revenue stream. This was very helpful to me at one point when I was replenishing savings as your savings job, the job that is going to replenish your savings, and just focus on that for, you know, 6 months, 8 months, get it back to where you want it to be. And that's it. I think your instincts are right. Everybody likes to write in and just get my second opinion. And I appreciate that. A lot of you already know what you need to do. This proves to me that what often is lacking is a reputable second opinion. And I really appreciate that you consider me your reputable second opinion. And finally, a question about investing from our friend in the audience. Kat says, I love your podcast, Farnoosh. I feel like I've finally worked up the courage to face my finances and get them in order. My question is this, when is it good to realize losses from a bad investment and use the money to purchase better performing ETFs? Is it ever worth it? Here's the story. When I was a kid, my uncle opened and managed an individual brokerage account for me. A few years ago, he gave me the login information and handed over the account. Unfortunately, I didn't know how investments worked. I was scared to mess it up and basically ignored the account. Recently, I went in to try to manage it for the first time and realized it was only invested in a few individual stocks that were not performing well. It went from 20,000 to 10,000 over a decade. Because it doesn't seem like it's a portfolio that will rebound, I'm thinking of selling the stocks and putting them towards better performing ETFs or bonds. But it feels like a waste of this gift that my uncle gave me, and maybe not like the correct choice. Is realizing the loss in favor of better investments a trade-off worth making? Well, Kat, I think that this portfolio is not structured properly. A good portfolio, we know, basics, comes down to diversity. This portfolio has 3 stocks, so it was kind of set up to fail in that it was set up with very few options. There's, you know, what you actually, she actually said this to me. I didn't read it out loud, but there's one particular stock that's really dragging all the others, and it doesn't look like that stock's going to ever rebound. And so 1 out of 3 is, those are not good odds. So I agree with you. I think that your uncle has still gifted you this portfolio, which yes, has lost value, but it's still worth something. It's still worth $10,000. There's still time to course correct. So I would take this $10,000, cash it out, pay the taxes, which won't be too high because it's long-term capital gains at this point. It's been 10 years, and use it to create a diversified portfolio of low fee exchange traded funds. And if the current platform where this fund is where this brokerage account is sitting is a good one, where they don't charge high fees and it's easy access, you can do this electronically online, maybe consider staying with them or pick up and go somewhere else. I don't think you're being unthankful. I don't think you're being ungrateful. I think that you're being smart. And I think ultimately you and your uncle can agree that you want this portfolio to grow. And the smart money bets on a diverse range of investments, not just 3. Thanks for your question, Kat. I think it's a really good one because as we are getting older, a lot of us might be inheriting investment portfolios from our loved ones. The wealth transfer is happening. So I predict more of these questions where people are like, ah, I got this money. I don't know what to do with it. And I feel like I should do it this way because this is what maybe my parent or my grandparent or my uncle would have wanted. You have to be smart about this money. Money is a limited resource. This portfolio has already tanked 50%, whereas it could have grown 50% over the last 10 years, considering that from 2011 to 2020, 2010 to 2020 was quite the market, quite the boom market. This portfolio had a chance and it still could have a chance, but you need to make some pivots. And I would start by reallocating that money to a more diverse portfolio that covers a wide range of assets across low fee ETFs. Good call. You have my blessing. And that's our show this Friday. Thank you so much for tuning in. If you have read A Healthy State of Panic and you like it, I beg you, please leave a review. I'm begging now because this seems to be quite a chore. And I know firsthand that writing reviews are not easy. They take time. They take a minute. But if you like this book and you want to support and you're wondering, how can I support Farnoosh? She's given me this podcast for 9 years and never asked for anything in return. I might be putting words in your mouth. Please go to Amazon and leave a review. It could even just be a quick rating review. You don't have to leave a word review, although I would love a written review. But if all you have time is just a quick 5-star rating, I will take it. I will take it gladly, gratefully. I'll see you back here on Monday, everybody. And I hope your weekend is so money. Hosting the So Money podcast for almost 10 years, I've been learning a lot about how to best serve you outside the show. I've begun to offer pop-up workshops and a So Money members club. And with each new line of business, a lot goes on behind every transaction. Stripe helps simplify and ease payments with Tap to Pay on iPhone, which helps me grow revenue and reach through accepting more in-person contactless payments when I'm out in real life promoting my programs. Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe give me the ability to scale quickly and stay flexible with quick setup and no additional hardware required. And it's not just ideal for me. From local pop-ups to global retailers, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe help businesses of all sizes accept contactless payments right from an iPhone. Whether your customers want to use their card, Apple Pay, or other digital wallet, now you can accept contactless payments right from an iPhone. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone. For the longest time, I dreaded buying bras. It was like shopping for jeans. Impossible. You want a bra that's sexy? You want a bra that's comfortable? You can't have both. Well, now you can, thanks to Third Love. Third Love was started to take all the frustration, the ick, the ugh, out of bra shopping. That's why they make solutions for every bra problem or brablem. Their bras make it easy to bring back perkiness you haven't seen since high school. Get smoothing, you know where, and have straps that actually stay put. Designed at their headquarters in San Francisco and made with premium materials, they put every style through hours of wear testing on real women, including themselves, before it's given the stamp of boob approval. Comfort and support are guaranteed. Plus, whether you're a AA cup or an H cup, their virtual fitting room will help you find your perfect fit fast. They even invented half cups. No more feeling stuck between two cup sizes that don't fit. It's time to get your problems solved. Visit thirdlove.com and get $15 off your order with the code PODCAST15.